You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon. Any quippy bits?
Nope.
All right, cool. Today we're going to be talking about the second serial of the 25th season of Doctor Who, The Happiness Patrol, which consists of three episodes that aired from November 2nd, 1988 to November 16th, 1988.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Bisexual Brigadier for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
You can check her out at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. And I also want to give a special shout out to our newest Patreon patron, Bill Lamond.
Hey, thank you, Bill.
You can check him out on Twitter at PastShelfDateJR. He also quite frequently sends us emails telling us what he thought of our episodes. He's a very cool dude.
Nice.
Hi, Bill. And also want to say hello to our two guests today. We have returning Vincent E.L.
Bless me, Watchathon, for I have sinned. It's been months now since my last pod session. I have not been catching up on classic Doctor Who, nor keeping up with the podcast, or any podcast. I fear I may have strayed too far from pod.
That
feels like it really threw you.
Yeah, just say three Hail Sarah Janes and you're good.
I don't know how it goes, but I'll improvise.
That's a Catholic thing, right? You say yeah. Hail Marys or whatever?
It just gets rid of your sins. They're gone now.
Also, Adam Clegg is here as well.
I can't quite follow that intro, but I would literally like to say I am actually wearing my Happiness Patrol t-shirt for this this recording. I've come fully prepared.
Happiness will prevail. So how are y'all doing? What's been going on with y'all? Whoever wants to start first can go fight it out.
It's obviously Christmas and New Year, so it's been a slightly weird thing of not knowing what day of the week it is for quite a while, and just trying to eat all the leftover food and drink all the booze that we bought. So yeah, I'm still in that slight confusion.
Nice. Vince?
I'm just, podcasting, living in the moment. I've been up to nothing, pretty much. Sinking into headaches and depressions and things like that, like we all do sometimes.
Especially in these pandemic times.
Also, while you're just waiting for time to start again. We're all on pause, which is nice and also weird.
I actually have some news. I'm starting a new job.
Right.
That is exciting.
I'm starting in a week. I'm going to be writing for Looper.com, various pop culture articles and whatnot, and I'm going to be writing for a living.
Hey.
Full time.
Congratulations and good luck.
Woo. I mean, the job's not full time, but I'll be writing full time.
I have other
freelance writing gigs. I'm going to be doing the dream, I guess. We'll see how that goes. But for now, Doctor Who.
I don't have titles. I don't have pretty much any notes at all this time because I couldn't be bothered. I used to have notes and come up with titles and things, but I got really fucking lazy around the time when I stopped watching. I've jumped ahead for this one.
Yeah, you left off sometime in the Fourth Doctor, right?
Yep. I'm still in the Tom Baker era. I'm stuck there and nobody has come and rescued me. I seem to be trapped in time.
You need Tom Baker to come pull you out.
Yeah, or anyone with a time machine. I'll take Reg.
Bill and Ted?
Doc Brown. Bill and Ted would do, you know, basically anyone. Skaldman.
Those guys from Primer?
I haven't seen Primer. I saw Looper. They had time travel. Probably not one of those people. That would not be ideal because either they would shoot me or expect me to shoot them or something. I don't know. So I'm hoping not one of those guys, but other than that, pretty much anyone. I mean, maybe not the Terminator. I'm gonna know on a Terminator.
Any time traveler whose purpose is to kill or be killed.
Yeah, those I'd rather not be the one to. But at this point, you know, it's beggars can't be choosers.
I don't remember what we're talking about now. Oh right, the Happiness Patrol. Let's dive into the Happiness Patrol, episode 1, A Dew Sprinkled Sunrise. So we start off very noir esque. There is a sad woman who is approached by a guy in like a trench coat. Is he in a trench coat? I think he's in a trench coat.
Yes, yeah, he is.
He had trench coat vibes.
He definitely looks mysterious. He says he knows of a place where all the sad people can go, and gives her a card, has his name on it, Silas P. And he's like, yeah, but flip it over. And then she flips it over and it's...
I was gonna say, it's his Twitter handle on the other side. That's where all the sad people go.
That's accurate.
At Silas_P83. She flips it over and it says that he works undercover for the Happiness Patrol. He points a gun at her and says, time to get really depressed. And then a whole bunch of the Happiness Patrol show up and they're all very bright pink and colorful. And I appreciate that because I currently have pink hair. It's like this episode was made for me. Except I guess I'm the bad guys?
Yeah.
Yep, you are the tool of a fascist regime.
Sounds right.
You're the ones who are complaining that they don't get cooler guns.
I mean, it's true. If you're going to have guns, they should look neat. Ace and the Doctor arrive on this planet and are just having a chat about dinosaurs, dropping some references to Invasion of the Dinosaurs, because the Doctor says the Brig met one of these dinosaurs. I forget which one.
I believe multiple Tyrannosaurus is Tyrannosauri?
Sure. Or pterodactyls, too, were also mentioned.
Shout out to the Princess and the Pterodactyls.
By J.B. Hivemind. Available on Amazon or where other books are sold.
But probably just Amazon.
I thought it was Hivemind.
Well, that reminds me. Road Trippy is in my public library. So if you're in Georgia, you can check out Road Trippy from a library.
Yeah, actually, if you're in Georgia at all because of the way that Pines works.
Yeah, so.
You can request that shit.
Yeah, people in Georgia, check out Road Trippy.
It's good, and I had nothing to do with it.
That's not true. You helped edit it.
A little bit.
You said, this shit doesn't make sense, fix it. And then we tried to fix it.
Did I?
Occasionally.
I think it was mostly just grammar stuff.
Yeah. But they talk about how they like dinosaurs, but they don't like elevator music, which is piped throughout this whole city. And I learned something while researching this episode. I put Muzak originally in my notes, but apparently that's a very specific company.
It is, but they do name it in the third part, I think. But yes, it is a company.
Yeah, I think that this episode they mostly just call it Lyft Music. But yeah, I think Muzak is maybe specifically American. I'm not sure.
The harmonica player calls it Muzak, I think.
And he's American, so that checks out. And we also learned that the Doctor has come to check this place out because there's stuff going on. Which is a continuation of, I know you don't know this, Vince, but a continuation from last serial of the Doctor less showing up and stuff happening and more the Doctor showing up because stuff is happening or he is specifically seeking stuff out.
McCoy is arguably the most proactive of the classic Doctors. You know, he doesn't always have a plan, but he very much seeks out trouble.
They did seem pretty keen on getting arrested.
That's the first step.
Is that a recurring thing?
No, I don't, or at least I don't. I mean, maybe it starts here, but
not unless it happens again.
I think it's more they just know the basic rules of a Doctor Who episode, and that if they want to find anything out, they have to get arrested. So they're like, if we just skip to this bit,
yeah. get it out of the way early.
I think what's really interesting is that we've talked a lot about, like, 13 being a cop.
Yeah.
And that it seems like she shows up places because things are going wrong, and that's to its detriment, because she feels like she's just there to, like, enforce rules.
Yeah.
Or, like, her version of morality. Whereas, like, I have no problem with it here whatsoever. I feel like there's a lot of things that Seven does that's present in 13 that bother me that totally work in this season and in this era, which is a little fascinating to me. I mean, and... part of it is that, like, they show up specifically, like, topple the government and leave.
Yes. It's not we're going to set things right and good and wholesome. It's more dangerous.
I think that one of the reasons this is obviously one of my very favourite eras of Who is it's, particularly once Ace joins, is it basically becomes about two anarchists travelling around blowing stuff up. And I think that's wonderful. But yeah, like, the Seventh Doctor isn't interested in fair play. He's very much just like, oh, this is bad. I am going to bring it crashing down now.
I'm just going to cause a little bit of chaos and go.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with these patterns because I'm not keeping up with with the show?
Well, really, it's kind of just starting since the
okay?
last one. I got a hiccup.
I feel like I have a basic grasp of who Ace is, because Ace is very much archetypal. Like it's very easy to get a read on Ace. Just the jacket alone says pretty much everything you need to know about Ace.
Definitely queer coded. This episode in general is pretty there's some pretty gay subtext going on in this one.
I mean, yeah, because you talked about Silas P at the beginning, and that I think is very reminiscent of undercover sting operations that were used against gay men. I mean, homosexuality became legal in Britain in the late 60s. I can't quite think of the date, but there was still, even after that, there were still police operations against cottaging and that sort of thing going on at the time. So yeah, feels very deliberate.
Speaking of metaphors and whatnot, we do see a scene of Silas P getting a badge for bagging 45 killjoys, as they're called, though he says it's 47. But the woman giving him the badge is Helen A., who is a metaphor.
No.
She's brilliant. And I actually, that bit where he gets the badge is, I love the dialogue throughout this story, but there's that one thing of, he's like, 47, and he's like, I'm aiming for the top, and she goes, not quite the very top.
So, for those not in the know, this character is definitely Margaret Thatcher, right?
You don't say.
Yeah, I think there's one bit later where she has a way of saying a line, families are very important for people's happiness, and that the way she says it, that's the most Thatcher-esque moment. So about the phrasing of it is so Thatcher, but yeah, but no one noticed. Like, literally in this country, it took 25 years, and then they reported on Newsnight referring to this story. I'm not kidding. It was like 25 years later. They went, was Doctor Who trying to bring down Thatcher? And it's like, but no one noticed at the time. 1988, no one cared. 2013, they literally had it as a news story, but 1988, no one noticed.
I think part of that may be
the popularity of
the show. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Very sadly,
Colin Baker kind of, not Colin Baker specifically, but that Eric, I feel like maybe drove people away.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the great advantages for the McCoy era is that no one at the BBC cares, and one of the great weaknesses is that no one at the BBC cares, so they can get away with all sorts of stuff, but when things are getting better, the programme isn't getting promoted, you know, they're stuck up against Coronation Street, so they're just kind of left to wither away, but at the same time, they get away, not just in this story, in others, with so much stuff that they probably couldn't do now. I don't think they could get away with half the stuff in the McCoy era now.
It's like the good version of what happened with Till Death. That show you watched.
It is like the good version of that, where no one's paying attention, so
they just do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But with Till Death, it was like, we'll just do whatever because we don't care. And this is like, we'll do whatever and get away with stuff that we've been wanting to do.
I always talk about Till Death because in their like last season, because you have to have, I think, 4 to be syndicated.
Yeah, there's like a
minimum. That's the only reason why they were still making the show. They would like reverse their music cues or just do dumb, weird shit. And I found this out at like 3 a.m. working master control, third shift. And like I heard music playing backwards and I was like, what is wrong with my playlist? What is happening? And I like had to look it up.
To find out they were doing it on purpose.
That they were doing it on purpose. And I was like, you really mess with my 3 a.m. third shift brain. Thank you.
Like, oh no, what's wrong?
I was reading about a show recently, I can't remember what it was called, but it had Rob Lowe was playing a lawyer, and they cancelled it, didn't get like a full season, but they had like 4 episodes left, which they had to complete for the DVD or something. So they just randomly decided in the last episode, turned out he's a serial killer. So this is a guy confronts him, he goes, yeah, stabs him, and then jumps off a building. And Rob Lowe's admitted, like, yeah, we just did that because we were like, well, no one cares.
That's beautiful.
That's amazing.
It's kind of beautiful what people end up doing when no one cares.
I mean, I think that may be what started the Westfall universe, too. So, why not? Who gives a shit? So the next thing that happens in this episode of Doctor Who is the Doctor and Ace are wandering around the city, and they bump into a man who is collecting names. His name is Trevor Sigma, which the Doctor gets to say that, oh, hey, when I was in college, they called me Theta Sigma. And he gets very mad because he wants real names and not nicknames.
Gross.
Because he asked for Ace's name and she says Ace and he's like, no nicknames. I don't know how he knows that's a nickname and not a real name.
I don't know. And in fact, it's great because Ace insists that that is her real name.
It is.
Because it is, yes. Any chosen name is your real name.
True.
And this actor we've seen before. He was in,
Caves of Androzani.
Caves of Androzani. Yes. He was the guy that, like, looked into the camera and, he just talked to the camera occasionally. Do you remember that? He turned to the camera. Like, it was like he misread the stage direction or something and they just went with it.
I don't remember that.
It's supposed to be, like, an aside to himself, but he, like, looks into the camera and says it. It's very unnerving.
I was going to say, I imagine and I didn't like that. I don't like being acknowledged when I watch TV. It upsets me.
And then he pushed a guy down an elevator shaft. But yeah, I didn't recognize him because he looks completely different. I think it's because he has a hat on. But then we see the Happiness Patrol driving a really cool car that I don't know why they didn't use this really cool car in a later scene.
I think they only had one really cool car and one mediocre car.
Yeah, they have one big dune buggy and one
go-kart.
Kind of shitty go-kart. Yes. But right now they're in the really cool dune buggy and they find the TARDIS and then they just start painting it pink.
And it looks great.
It does. I kind of wish it stuck around being pink for a little while. It really suits it. And the Doctor likes it too as well. He comes in and talks about how great it looks. They're like, you're not displeased by it? And he's like, no, it looks cool. But yeah, this is the scene where they're trying to get arrested. And I think they get arrested for not having badges, though there is like a joke about Ace, like, I have badges, look, and then points to the badges on her jacket. Also, Ace at some point, I think, like, she's like, why do you have these cheap guns or whatever? And then they fire the gun and it's like impressive. And then Ace says, Gordon Bennett. And I didn't know what the hell Gordon Bennett was.
It's Goramit.
Is that like Cockney slang or something? What is Gordon Bennett?
It's just one of those things that sounds similar.
People did used to say it, like, it was kind of fake swearing for kids. I remember in the 80s, people would say Gordon Bennett. Kids would say it sometimes.
It's like gosh darn it.
Yeah, gosh darn it. It's that kind of thing. It probably does have a Cockney origin somewhere, but I'm not sure exactly what it would be.
I'm going to Google it real quick. Gordon Bennett is an expression of incredulity which alludes to the outrageous behavior of the American sportsman, publisher, and all-around hellraiser, James Gordon Bennett Jr. So it's a real person.
I figured it was just because it sounds like God damn it.
He was an enthusiastic and hedonist playboy.
Gordon Bennett.
He apparently did a lot of, like, crazy sports stuff. A significant promoter and patron of sports, especially those requiring impressive and expensive equipment. For example, international motor racing, ballooning, and air racing. There's also the International Gordon Bennett Balloon Race, which still continues. It was inaugurated by him in 1906. So I guess he was a loud fellow. I don't know. But yeah, it's to cover up cursing. Got it. Cool. I had no idea, and it becomes a plot point. Then we cut back to Helen A., who stops her husband, Joseph C., from watching some television. He's like, this is a weird program. It's called Routine Disappearance 499,987.
Can I say, I really love the fact that he's not Joseph B., because everyone in this society, you know, their position is determined by the alphabetical letter at the end of the name. That you never meet anyone who's got a B. This, he's always got that gap. So he's Joseph's, her own husband is Joseph C., not Joseph B. Like, she always wants to keep a little bit of distance.
I do love that.
I'm wondering, how many deaths do they do in this serial? Do they get to 500,000? Because it was definitely, when he's watching the video, it's 499,987. And the routine, the disappearance he's watching is the woman from the beginning of the episode. So I wonder if they hit 500,000. I'm going to have to keep track as we recount this episode. But anyway, they turn that off to watch her broadcast where she says her catchphrase, which is, happiness will prevail. Is there a happiness slogan in every season of Sylvester McCoy? Because last season had Build High for Happiness.
No, there isn't in, not to spoil it for you, but there isn't in next season, I'm afraid. But now you've said it, that is actually a really missed opportunity.
Right? You just need one serial every season that has brightly colored characters who talk about happiness. That's why it got canceled. They just forgot to do it and ruined it. Then the Doctor and Ace are taken away to a, not to a prison, but to a waiting zone where they meet another Killjoy, Harold V, who used to be Harold's higher up letter.
Yeah.
And he is playing slots. He wins and he gets a joke as a prize, which is something along the lines of, what happened to the Killjoy who won or something? And then the punchline is, he was tickled to death. Not a very good joke. The doctor says it's not funny, and who would have written something like that? And Harold says, oh, I wrote it. He was the gag writer, and then his brother went missing, went to look for his brother, and then they basically demoted him to a killjoy and are going to kill him at some point. When the doctor asks if there are prisons, if they're in a prison, like they're in this waiting zone, and he is assured that there are no prisons, so he just starts to walk away, and she's like, but if you cross that line, we will kill you. And he does a nice little pirouette back. But Harold starts just telling him a bunch of exposition about, like, there's executions, and he tells them about the Candy Man, and we briefly see the Candy Man, and he is literally...
It's the coolest shit I've ever seen in my life, that's what he is.
He's super awesome.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's so good.
It actually got this show in some legal trouble, because I don't know if... In America, you have Bertie Bassett?
No.
No, he was a, he's a, I don't know if he still is, but he was like a mascot for Licorice All Sorts. And he was a like a character made of candy, of Licorice All Sorts. So he looked similar to the Candy Man. So when...
Oh yeah, I can see, just pulling up pictures and I can see the similarities.
So when Doctor Who was like, look, it's Bertie Bassett as a psychotic sociopathic killer, Bassett were a bit like, oh... Okay, and which is why when they eventually release like the Series 25 Blu-ray box set, I'm sure they won't put the Candy Man on the cover because I think they had to basically come to an agreement not to use the picture too much of him or something. There was some kind of legal back and forth. It's why I think when Big Finish did a box set with him, they gave him a... He was on the box, but he had a totally different design.
Probably not to use it in promotional ways. That's amazing. Just pulled up a Google image search so that I can see, and the one of the results is a deviant art somebody drew of them fighting.
Oh god, I haven't seen that. send me the link to that. I want to see that. But I mean, it's great. I personally think Doctor Who should spend more time fighting psychotic versions of corporate mascots. It's absolutely my cup of tea. But
I mean, they kind of somewhat did that in Kerblam, but then like the Doctor wound up on their side weirdly.
Don't get me started about Kerblam. I can't.
I did make a joke to someone after Kerblam that imagine like the Kerblam version if Peter Mateigue wrote Happiness Patrol, and it was like, thank you, Doctor. We've now got our routine disappearances up 47%, and we've wiped out the pipes to your help.
And the thing about the Candyman looking like Bertie Bassett, that was not the original intention for the character. He was just supposed to look like a guy. Just like, I think he was supposed to be in a white suit and had like a monocle or something. But he was just supposed to look like a guy.
So at what point did they make the decision to make a crazy candy robot?
I think it was the production team who was like, man, let's do something interesting with this. Let's just make him a big Candyman. Literally. Like, I think he was supposed to...
the Candyman, and they were like, oh no. Well, I mean, you're getting a Candyman.
I think he's supposed to be made of candy stuff, like inside of him, but he looks human, but he's made of candy.
God bless you, production team. What a good choice.
He is one of my favorite monsters in all of Who. It's just,
they definitely made the right wrong call.
I think in the novelization he's described not looking like this, so
that's why you don't read the novelization.
No, this is 100% correct.
But he makes sweets. That's what the Candy Man does.
There's something very good about this character, like, menacingly making candy.
And he has the most, like, ridiculous voice. It's,
I mean, he has the voice of a corporate mascot.
He does. It's very high-pitched.
To the best of my knowledge, he's the only Doctor Who monster to ever answer the phone with his own name.
The thing, the way that that voice is done, it's a trick that was done a lot in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio series as well, with the various voices like the Vogons and things like that. Is what you do is you take the audio input into a pitch shifter, which shifts it down a little bit, and then you feed it back into itself so that it pitches that down and pitches that down and like layers these, so you get this falling or rising echo. It's a really weird effect, but there's something about these Brits just loving that effect in their science fiction. Because like, if you listen to like Marvin in the radio series of The Hitchhiker's Guide, the TV series as well, is like, that's that effect, but it's falling, and here it's that effect, but rising. So it's pitching it up and feeding into itself, as opposed to pitching it down and feeding into itself.
While watching the episode, and we were listening on our headphones, you can also slightly hear Sylvester McCoy
getting picked up
by it as well in a couple scenes. just very slightly.
That's probably because of the microphones that he used.
Yeah, I assume. But what they're doing right now, what the Candyman is up to, is he's setting up an execution. Fondant surprise.
That's not fondant.
It's not?
No.
I don't know what fondant is.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I think fondant's like the stiff stuff that you use to cover like wedding cakes. And it's not liquidy. It's like a Play-Doh almost.
It is if you melt it, probably.
Maybe the surprise is that it isn't fondant.
That would be surprising.
But they basically put a tube over a man and then just squirt sweet goo on him. And he
gross.
He dies.
Icing, not fondant. I'm just saying.
Icing. I mean, fondant is icing, technically. But
true.
Joseph C. Does the execution, and the guy falls out dead, and he like tastes some of it. And I think he's like, strawberry. Very gross. Very goopy. I love this like mix of like, you know, Candyland and bright colors and happiness. And it's the most dystopian, fucked up stuff. That's very good.
I think that's kind of realistic because, like, you can't really sell a dystopia on, like, grays. You kind of have to make it look inviting in order for people to go along with it for long enough to get stuck in it. Aesthetics is a huge part of fascism.
Yeah, like, I feel like I've seen so many dystopian things that are like, no one is allowed to have emotions, like, at all. You must be bland and like equilibriums like that and stuff. You're not allowed to experience happiness, really. And like, this is one of the first ones I've ever seen that it's like the opposite of that. It's like you can only experience happiness and nothing else.
Yeah, I think that's what they usually get wrong. This one kind of got it right.
I'll say when I watched Equilibrium, I didn't experience happiness, but no, you're right. It's absolutely correct. This gets it right. And it is. I always say Happiness Patrol seems more realistic the longer I'm alive, particularly in like a post-Trump world. There's very much that desire. It's not enough for people of a certain political persuasion just to be in charge. They want to control how people feel. That's what I've come to realize. You know, all this bullshit. Sorry, you don't swear on this. All this Gordon Bennett rubbish.
We swear.
We swear a lot.
Oh, okay. I've always been really careful when I've come on here because I thought you don't swear for some reason. Basically, all the bullshit we talk about the culture war and stuff, that's just another way of trying to control how people feel, you know. Like, we get it a lot in this country, you know, particularly after Brexit, a lot of don't talk Britain down. If you talk Britain down, bad things will happen. Kind of thing. And it's just, oh, do I get them? I look at Happiness Patrol and I'm like, this isn't unrealistic. This is very close to my lived reality.
If they start making people out of candy, that's when we gotta be really worried.
I think that's on the list of the points of fascism.
Yeah. Candroids.
So they kill this guy, and then they also kill Harold through the slot machine. He's electrocuted. And this makes Ace very angry, and she's ready to fight.
I love her so much. God, I love Ace.
And then the doctor is, like, basically stopping her, and he's like, not yet. She's like, but I want to make them pay. And he's like, don't worry, we will.
This
and I'm like, oh my God, they are so dangerous.
Energy. I love it.
They're terrifying.
They're my favorite TARDIS team. It's because of things like this, I think. But also, what's interesting is, Priscilla P, you know, Ace gets angry because she's making these really tasteless jokes. But you think about, like, 3 years ago in terms of Doctor Who, the Sixth Doctor was making jokes like that when people were killed, so...
Yeah, because she says something like, there's, like, a buzzing joke, and there was a real shock.
You got a shock out of that.
Yeah, but yeah, I now think of that scene where the Sixth Doctor pushes the... Well, doesn't
push. He doesn't push!
Yeah, it's iffy when those people fall in that vat of acid or whatever, and he's very casual about it. Excuse me if I don't join you or something like that.
Very quippy and very off-putting.
But yeah, I love them so much. They seem dangerous, and that is good. Then speaking of dangerous things, we get Helen goes to feed her pet, which is this weird
just a good puppet. Just a good, good puppet.
Yeah, it's a weird little werewolf-looking puppy named Fifi. I love this thing so much.
Yeah, it's good craftsmanship.
I'd pet that thing. And then the doctor and Ace are still in the waiting zone and trying to figure out how to get away. They talk, Priscilla, you said Priscilla P?
I think think it's Penelope in the waiting zone.
Yeah, she's the guard, basically. They talk to her about it. This go-kart that's nearby, like, we can just go on this go-kart. There's nothing that...
Again, this is the less cool go-kart.
Yes, this is the less cool go-kart.
And it's also incredibly slow.
Very slow. I feel like you could walk faster than it. But he's like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not going to, like, blow up if we try to use it. And she's like, no, everything's fine. And then he goes over to Ace and is like, it's definitely booby-trapped. But they do defuse the booby-trap on the go-kart. Well, the doctor does, and Ace really wants to help out, wants to do it, but the doctor won't let her, and she is very annoyed by
it. Ace is like, explosions are literally my whole thing.
Why? Never let me have any fun. It's adorable. I love their dynamic so much. But they do defuse it, and then they go 2 miles an hour down a hallway.
You know, it's a very aesthetically designed hallway.
Yeah, the sets look really cool. This episode does remind me a lot of, visually and aesthetically, it reminds me a lot of...
Paradise Towers?
Paradise Towers, thank you, yeah.
But, again, something else I love about this era of Doctor Who is... Because going into this now as a fan, even before I'd seen this story, I knew kind of what to expect. But imagine you've watched Remembrance of the Daleks, and then the next week you get this. And it's aesthetically, it's so at the other end of the scale.
I love that. That's what I love about Doctor Who in general. Just the wild swings you can get. It's not beholden to anything, really. It can be whatever it needs to be. Then we see a scene of a man playing the blues on a harmonica. His name, we'll learn, is Earl. And he is being watched by something in the sewers. Basically, what we'll learn about the people in the sewers is they're just a bunch of splinters from TMNT.
Yep.
They have a very harsh vocal processor thing going on. I can't understand half of what they say.
I've watched this story on and off for 20 years, and I still have struggle. I should just put the subtitles on. I really should, but it gets to the point. I don't want to. As a shame, because I kind of feel the point people are the weakest part of the story. Like, they're just kind of there, and it adds a weird kind of accidental thing about colonialism, that because it's their planet and everyone else has turned up on it, but it's never addressed in the story.
Right.
It's like, okay. You could cut them out very easily and you wouldn't lose much thematically. And you wouldn't have me going, what? What? Whenever they speak.
Got it, Bennett!
Never mind the Sea Devils, when are they coming back?
But the go-kart breaks down, and they're like, oh no, how will we get away? It's not like we could walk faster than this. And the doctor gets to work fixing it, and Ace sort of wanders off and is immediately arrested and taken to auditions for the Happiness Patrol, where she meets her girl, she meets Susan Q.
This is a good scene!
They just flirt a lot in this scene.
She is the first official Ace's girlfriend. Well, maybe male counts in Dragonfire, to be fair, but this is like the first, I always feel like this is the first like time you look at Ace and go, oh, maybe you're not that heterosexual.
I mean, Tony realized it immediately. I mean, did you see the jacket?
Fair point.
But they have a whole little scene where they just, I don't even remember what they're talking about, but it's heavily flirtatious, I feel like.
I mean, what they're talking about is that, what was her name?
Susan Q, or Susie Q.
Isn't Susie Q a song by Creedence Clearwater Revival?
Yes, it is. And also, there was a film called Susie Q that was about a ghost girl played by the Pink Power Ranger. It's a Disney Channel original movie.
She doesn't want to be on the Happiness Patrol anymore.
Yeah.
Like, she is aware that it's bullshit. And she doesn't want Ace to die.
It's really interesting for me that scene actually with her, because you're right, she's been part of the system. She's been part of the Happiness Patrol. So she's very, you know, she's probably been complicit in routine disappearances. It's never stated, but you can infer that. And then she's like, I am broken by this system and I'm going to let you escape, even though it will mean my death. I find that really interesting. I think it's a very bleak scene, beautifully kind of, it's never overly stated, but it's kind of suicide almost in a way.
Yeah, it's implied.
Because that's what she does. She's like, I'm going to give you a key and then I'm going to close my eyes and whatever happens, happens. So Ace escapes. It's a very good scene.
It's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I'm immediately paying attention now.
The doctor gets the go-kart up and going again, but then it breaks down again. And he meets Silas P, who tries to trick him and does the little card thing again. And it's every time he hands them the card, do they read the Silas P side first?
I think he hands it to them that way specifically.
Yeah, that makes sense. But if I get handed a card, I generally like flip it around to the back because that's where all the important information is.
You're like, I know how a business card works. This scene would not work on me.
I think he maybe hands it to people assuming they're going to do that, but then when they don't, he has to tell them to flip it.
Yeah, this isn't a bit he's doing. This is something that keeps happening to him.
He's like, God damn it.
Yeah, why don't they ever flip it? I just...
But before, like, he does flip it, and before he can whistle, that's what it is, he has a whistle. Yeah, before he can whistle for the Happiness Patrol, the blues harmonica player guy knocks him over the head and saves the doctor. They leave, and then the Happiness Patrol shows up, and Silas P is upset that he didn't get the doctor, and they're like, you're upset! And then they kill him, because he's not happy. Then we get some more of the Candyman, and a new character named Gilbert. I don't remember his letter, but they're just a bickering couple, basically. Because, like, he shows up and the Candyman's like, what hour do you think this is?
Oh, it's brilliant, that line. I love it because it is. There's no other Doctor Who monster that gets to say stuff like that in the classic series.
It's very good.
Well, to bring it back to Ninja Turtles references, their dynamic is a little bit Shredder and Krang in the 87 series.
But they bicker a bit. The Doctor and Earl are sneaking around in this candy kitchen, but they are caught by the Candyman and Gilbert. And but that's the cliffhanger, as they're caught by the Candyman as the end of episode one, which again I called A Dew Sprinkled Sunrise, and episode two, which we're now in the episode two, which I've called A Sigh Wrapped Rainbow.
I see what you're doing.
You see what I'm doing?
I see what you're doing. I don't care for it, but I see it.
So Ace sees a march, a protest march, and is taken to captured again and taken to another waiting zone. Ace keeps just getting arrested.
It's a grand Doctor Who tradition.
I was going to say, to be fair, that is what the Doctor said the plan was.
She took it to heart. The march, the protest march, they have like, what's the big banner they have? I thought it was very clever and now I can't remember what it says.
You didn't put it in your notes?
I know. I'm bad at taking notes.
It's factor crumple conditions are a joke. I'm guessing factory?
That's it. That's the sign I liked. So the Candyman straps the Doctor and Earl down and just talks about what he does, which is that he makes sweets that kill people. The Doctor questions the Candyman about the executions. And, like, he just gives up a lot of information very easily. Then the dumbest thing happens. Perhaps the stupidest thing in this episode, but I don't mind because it's ridiculous and wonderful. The Doctor tricks the Candyman into turning around and knocking some stuff to the floor, and it's lemonade. He knocks lemonade to the floor. He gets stuck to the floor because he's made of candy, and then the Doctor and Earl escape.
Yeah, and he does like a science-y explanation for how that happened, as if he'd need much more than... It's candy. It's wet. It's stuck.
But I kind of love the fact that they do acknowledge the impracticalities of making a robot from candy, which is lemonade, can stick it to the floor. You know, there's no kind of like, they don't try and like pass it over and go, no, it's a special sweet substance. It's like, no, he's made of candy. Lemonade's going to stick him to the floor.
Why was there just lemonade like right on the edge of that table? It's a very convenient setup.
So it's... they're making candy.
I feel like this would be happening all the time if you just left your lemonade right there on the counter, right next to the edge. I knock stuff off all the time.
Why?
Cause I'm clumsy.
Do that.
It's a little convenient, but it's fine. The Doctor and Earl escape through a pipe, a syrup pipe, and the Doctor sets up a Chekhov's gun and says not to make certain sounds. He's not so much concerned about the loudness as much as, I guess, the pitch, the specific note that is made, because we'll learn out what happens later if you make the right noise. The Candyman asks Gilbert to help unstick him, and Gilbert doesn't. He's just takes this time to put the Candyman in his place and says they have symbiosis. You need me, and I need me, which I think is a very good line.
And it seems like a little bit of a one-sided symbiosis there.
A little bit. So he just doesn't unstick him, because he's like, I'm going to show you who's boss. The sewer people, the little rat guys, find the Doctor and Earl. Earl plays his harmonica for them, and they think it is, quote, Wicked! And because they say the word wicked, the doctor's like, oh, they've seen Ace. And then when they're talking about, oh, you've met my friend Ace, they're like, we don't know an Ace. We know Gordon Bennett.
At some point, I don't know if this has happened yet, but at some point, Earl was his name, said it can only be the work of a schizophrenic obsessive, which seems like a bit of an armchair diagnosis. Like, I feel like there's maybe a little bit of assumption going on there, and possibly a bit problematic. Schizophrenic obsessive is not does not equate to a murderer. It's not really what that diagnosis means. It's a bit of stigmatizing nonsense there.
Plus, as the 80s. We were not as progressive with our mental health stuff back in the 80s.
Still aren't, really.
That's true. But Susan is taken away, I guess, to take him back to the auditions. I'm not quite sure. They're going to take Ace, but Ace is saved by one of the sewer people.
One of the Master Splinters.
I think their name is Wolfric and Wences, which they say, like, one time in episode 3.
God, do they have names?
Yeah. Yes, the doctor calls them Wolfric and Wences.
20 years of watching this, and I've never realized they have names. I'm a bad fan. I do a goddamn podcast about this era, and I've never realized they had names. Oh, I'm gonna have to hand in my badge. Eric's gonna have to get a new co-host.
Are there names in the credits?
I don't think so. I think the doctor just calls them that. Again, in episode 3.
Wences and Wolfric are in the credits.
But I don't think they get name dropped until episode 3, like with dialogue. So the doctor and Earl leave the sewers. They bump into Trevor again, and Earl just leaves. He's like, bye, I'll see you later. And starts playing his harmonica. Trevor is like, ooh, I like that. It makes me feel melancholy. Then something that happens twice in this serial, Helen, for the first time, sends Fifi into the pipes to take care of the sewer people. And I guess the doctor and stuff. Or maybe Ace. I don't know. She just wants to take out her problems that are in the sewer with her dog. Then we see the march again. Some snipers set up on a rooftop nearby the protest march. There are two guys who start discussing gender. They're like, women get all the good jobs and we get the grunt work.
I thought they were complaining about the guns specifically.
They are complaining about the guns specifically. The doctor sort of like, you know, talks around Trevor into making Trevor feel like the doctor is somewhat above him and gets him to take him to Helen A. And they go there and discuss population control. She had been told to implement some programs or whatever to get the population under control. And she didn't do that. She just, she did her own thing, which was, you know, killing a bunch of people.
Candy. I love the moment where Joseph C goes, no more queues at the post office. In Britain, that's a real Daily Mail right-winger moan that the queues are too long at the post office. And it's just a wonderful term to use for what is not genocide, but mass murder of your population. To go, yeah, but, you know, no more queues at the post office. It feels like a Daily Mail headline.
Spin is one thing to call that.
It's kind of like right now for me, I feel like there's a lot of people complaining about like how no one wants to work in fast food anymore. And it's a combination of people not wanting to work for such low wages. But also, I feel like there's a lot of people who died from the pandemic. There's a lot less people to do the job. Similar sort of situation, I feel like. People complaining about the wrong thing.
Yeah, they should just raise the wages and increase the safety protocols.
Exactly. While they do this, Helen leaves to go to her office to do something. And the doctor just starts poking around and finds Helen's photo album. And the only thing in the photo album is pictures of her and Fifi. Do you think Fifi's Fifi B?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, actually. I didn't give him going what I said earlier. You're right, I think Fifi is Fifi B, no doubt.
There's no pictures of her husband. It's just her and the dog. But the doctor does sneak into Helen's office as she's, you know, being overtly evil and setting up executions. And he confronts her about these executions. And she tries to call her guards, but they're not coming very fast. I don't know if he did something to fuss with that. But he leaves and takes an extinguisher and a bottle of lemonade with him that he will utilize later. Meanwhile, in the sewers, Ace throws Nitro 9 at Fifi, and I assumed it killed the dog. I was wrong. Fifi's fine. I was very upset, though. I was like, no! Not the pupper!
I know this dog is evil, but it's still a puppy!
So the doctor runs out with the extinguisher and the lemonade and finds Earl. Earl tells the doctor about the protest march and also that there are snipers set up nearby. So the doctor goes to take care of that in a scene that is amazing. The doctor just is so intimidating that they put their guns down.
Yeah, that scene is good. I like that scene.
Yeah, what's great about it is he doesn't shout or anything at them. He's just so intense.
He doesn't even threaten them. He just talks them out of it. And he just basically says, you don't want to do that. Just do it. Actually, he tries to talk them into it. Because he's basically goading them. He's saying, yeah, shoot me. I'm standing right here.
Well, I think that is part of the like subtext of that scene is like, they're snipers. So he's like, I've killed people a bunch. But and he's like, I've never done it up close. And he's like, yeah, because you can't.
Like, look into my very much alive eyes looking at you.
And kill me. And the guy's like, right, no, that's yucky. Like, it's a good scene. It's so good.
Yeah, he's faced with the reality of what he's doing.
The original plan for it was that Doctor was going to be basically some kind of hypnosis, and this is so much better than that.
Yeah.
Because it's just false personality. It always makes me laugh that he takes a sniper rifle and he chucks it off the balcony, and I always imagine there's some poor guy underneath who just gets squashed by the sniper rifle as he chucks it off. Like,
or some children come by and they're like, ooh, a toy! They're about to execute Susan. They set her up under the pipe. Ace and the sewer people are in the pipe where the goop starts coming out and they have to run away from it. But the doctor goes to the candy kitchen and offers to free the candy man in exchange for him stopping the fondant surprise that's going to kill Susan.
It occurs to me that the reason why it's Susan Q and not Susie Q is specifically no nicknames.
Oh, good point. But he does. He frees the Candyman with the fire extinguisher thing. And then he goes and stops the fondant surprise. And just a little bit of goop comes out. Ace, when they were running away from the goop, Ace popped out where the execution was. And she's like holding on to Susan as the fondant surprise is about to drop. And it's just a little trickle comes out. And then they run off. Or maybe they get caught. I don't remember. And then Helen's watching this and like, ugh. We're going to have to do that execution again. And Trevor is like, actually, you can't. That's double jeopardy, baby. You can't do the same execution on the same person twice.
That's just the law, apparently.
Yeah. If it doesn't work the first time, you got to do something different. He does say an alternate execution will be fine. You just can't do the fondant surprise again.
Not because that's fucked up and weird. Just because you can't do it again.
Anyway, the Candyman's like, so doctor, our deal is up. We're good. You let me go. I stopped the fondant surprise. But now that our deal is over, I'm going to kill you. So the doctor just puts more lemonade on him and sticks him to the floor again. I like how, like,
fucking useless this guy is.
Yeah, episode 1 sets him up as so terrifying and weird. And then episode 2, 95% of it, he's stuck to the floor.
Again, I feel that that's become more realistic as we see various people, you know, like various, say, Trump allies who are kind of dangerous, but also shockingly incompetent at the same time.
And I kind of like that the same problem is solved the exact same way twice, just because it can be solved the same way twice.
Right.
Which is like, in writing, it's so common to like, oh, we have this problem, we solve it, and then next time it happens, you got to think of a new, clever solution to it. But it's like, you already have a solution. You already did it once, and the lemonade's right there. Just do it again.
But you can't do fondant surprise twice.
I think it's specifically in reference to that. I think that is a clever juxtaposition of like, well, if you can't do things twice, well, we can. So fuck off.
Huh. I never thought of that. That's a good point. Helen tells Ace and Susan that they are going to have to audition on the late show at the Forum, which is basically a different form of execution. Then we cut to the Earl playing his harmonica and the doctor playing spoons as people throw money in a hat for him.
There was an earlier point. I don't know if anybody pointed this out and I blanked out, but there was a point where Ace was playing the spoons.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That happened when she was auditioning for the Happiness Patrol, I think. She played spoons, yeah. Well, they're trying to figure out what her talents are or whatever, and she does spoons, but they're like, that's not good. And then she's
that's
like,
not a talent.
Can you sing? And she's like, I know this really good song. It's really sad. And they're like, well, I can't do that. In this scene, it's the doctor, and there's the on the DVD that the performance of Earl and the doctor playing, like the doctor playing spoons and Earl playing his harmonica, is a bit longer. It seems odd to me that there's like all of this stuff going on and they just take a moment to do a little street performance.
I think when we were watching this, I think it was Christine who said that the doctor just kind of wanders in and out of the plot and is not beholden to it in any way. In a way that makes him seem like extremely powerful.
Yeah,
his ability to not give a damn or be affected by anything.
There is a certain aura about him, a mysteriousness to specifically this doctor, I feel like, that's different than we've seen before. There's just a little weirdness about him. But they do a little performance, and they see some posters being put up for the late show, and Ace is on one of them. The doctor asks, like, the ticket guy, like, when's the show? And he's like, in 5 minutes. And he's like, what? Well, why are the posters just now being put up? And they're like, yeah, that's just, you know, we have to do that. But everybody shows up. It's like, they have to show up. It's compulsory. So the doctor sends Earl to go to the get the protesters. He's like, get the protesters, bring them to this show thing. I got a plan in mind. And then the poster next to Ace's with a different person on it, someone paints the letters R.I.P. on it.
In pink.
Uh-oh. Things could be bad for Ace. That is the cliffhanger. That is the end of episode 2. And we are now into episode 3, which I have called A Dream Dipped Tomorrow. I don't know do you know what I'm doing?
I know what you're doing.
Do y'all know what I'm doing?
No.
I don't know what you're doing.
It's the lyrics to the Candyman can.
Oh, of course.
I see.
You could have just called these 3 episodes Candyman, Candyman, Candyman.
That would have been dangerous. And I think you just brought some trouble on yourself.
Imagine if you just there hear this thumping or screaming, then I just don't respond for the rest of the podcast.
What if you'd said Candyman, 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 and instead of getting...
Why?
Isn't it you have to say it 5 times?
I think it's 3 times in a mirror? I haven't actually seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
Does it require a mirror? I saw a trailer for the new one.
In the original, it does require a mirror. I can't remember if it's 3 or 5 times. It's a great film, by the way, the original. Really, really good. But yeah, I think... I'm looking in the mirror, so I'm safe. There we go.
I'm looking at my image. I'm recording the video for this in OBS. So does that count as a mirror?
Maybe.
It is 5 times.
It's a bit like the question, if you uploaded the VHS video from The Ring onto YouTube, would that count as showing it to somebody else? You know,
these are the like weird loopholes you have to think through.
The analog purists would definitely have a couple of things to say against the uploading to YouTube thing, because once it's digital, it's not real. Tarantino would have a problem with it.
What if you said Candyman however many times you're supposed to say it? And instead of, you know, the murderous guy with the, I don't know, he has a hook for a hand or something, right? I don't remember. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, hook for hand.
But if instead of the horror movie Candyman, you got the Doctor Who Candyman, would that be less terrifying or more terrifying?
It depends on if you have lemonade or not. Yeah.
Maybe you just get a phone call and you pick it up and the other voice at the end goes, Candyman?
I don't think it needs to be lemonade. I think you can just as well use, like, a Coke, for example.
Or he doesn't show up, but the Bertie Bassett people show up and say, please, please cut it out.
You get a letter from the lawyers, cease and desist.
So anyway, episode 3, the final episode, which, can I say, it's nice to have, like, a 3-parter. The pace is so much better.
Yeah, I'm glad I got this one and not one of the 25-parters.
Oh, yeah, those classic Doctor Who 25-parters.
Yeah.
The doctor is still talking to the ticket guy and asks if Ace is on the list. And he's also telling what the talents are that they're doing or whatever for this thing. And he's like, is it this? Is it this? Is it this? And the doctor's like, could be magic. She is good at making things disappear because she blows stuff up. But she's not on it for magic. She's on it for miracle survival. And the doctor figures that the trick to that is it'd be a miracle if you can survive. So he's got to go rescue her. So then we see that Fifi is damaged by the Nitro 9, but is not dead because Helen bandages Fifi up and is going to release Fifi into the pipes again. This is the only part of the serial that like I felt was like a little repetitive. Like we get this, it's basically the same thing both times, is that like Helen puts Fifi into the pipes and then Fifi gets hurt. It happens twice. And not in an interesting way like the lemonade on the Candyman. The weakest part of this series, the serial, is in the pipes.
I'm just going to keep the Ninja Turtles references going and say that Fifi looks like something out of Next Mutation.
Which is your favorite version of the Ninja Turtles, right?
Yep, fan absolute top favorite. Everybody loves it. I mean, the puppetry is decent for the budget on that show, which can be said here as well. And I think it's similar.
If you got to say something nice, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like movie level puppetry, but like for like a Fox Kids live action show, I'd say the puppetry on that show is pretty good.
Doctor is waiting outside the forum for Earl and the protesters to show up. And Trevor shows up and says that he's finished his census. He shows the doctor a list that's basically like, these are all the people that aren't here anymore. People that have disappeared. And he flings it out. And it's very, very long. But he's got to leave because he's got to do a census somewhere else on Earth. But while the doctor is waiting, he gets up and there's just like a microphone. And he goes and he sings a song. There's just a lot of the doctor just performing. He sings as time goes by. And as he's singing it, Earl walks up and joins him on harmonica. And then the protesters show up and they all start celebrating. They're having a very happy time. And the Happiness Patrol show up with Susan and Ace. The doctor basically uses their own logic against them and says, we're all being happy. You're the ones being unhappy. And then the patrol sort of turns on each other. Because one half of the patrol is like, you're right, they're not being happy. And like points their gun at the other half of the patrol. And
I love this.
It's very good. And you can't attack the protesters either because we're all having a good time.
It's gloriously Seventh Doctor. It's very much using the rules of the system against them. But I also like the idea that half the Happiness Patrol are such genuine fanatics that they'll just follow it. They won't think outside of the rules.
And then the doctor steals their cool go-kart, the big dune buggy one. Helen A hears like an announcement that like things are going badly. So she leaves Joseph to retrieve Fifi and she's going to go deal with the Happiness Patrol because they're fighting each other. And then she goes and broadcasts onto the slots machine because the Happiness Patrol is now in the waiting zone. And she appears on the slots machine and is basically like, hey, cut it out. And then everyone goes into the sewers and there's a bit of a chase scene where they're being chased by Fifi. And this is the point where the sewer sound thing pays off because the doctor just starts having Earl play different notes on his harmonica to, I don't know,
reverb. Find the resonant frequency.
With the crystals that are hanging, the syrup crystals that are hanging in the pipe. And when he plays a note, Fifi will howl the same note at the same time, which causes it to resonate even more. And they fall on top of Fifi. So again, it's another scene of Fifi goes into the pipes, chasing people, and then gets hurt. But this time it's much more deadly. So things are going really bad. Factories are being destroyed. I mean, going bad for Helen A. She's like, we need someone to take charge of this. Someone who's like really, you know, into this whole Happiness Patrol thing. So she's like, Priscilla P is very gung-ho about this, and she turns on a video to see where Priscilla P is at, and she has been incapacitated by Ace and Earl. So, like, she keeps trying to do these things, and then, like, stuff keeps popping up that, like, she's already been bested, basically.
I think it works so well, because there's what they do, they don't, when the doctor turns up, it's never the sense that this is a dictatorship that's working really well. It's obviously a system that's kind of already falling apart, so all he really has to do is just give it a good kick and then the whole thing, you know, crumbles rather than is like, so it, like he does the impossible or something. It's very much like he's just there just to provide an example, and then they run off and destroy, what was it, 1,000 factories or whatever.
There's also a bit where like they're just taking out the speakers and they're like, oh, listen to that quiet or whatever, and the doctor's like, I don't know, I can hear the toppling of governments. is very good. But because Priscilla P has been captured by Ace and Earl, she calls the Candyman. And the Candyman's like, don't worry about it, I'm already on it, because I'm pretty sure the Doctor and Ace are in here with me. And he threatens them, and they're threatening him, and he says some glorious line about, I'm going to show you the back of my candy hands! But they use a hot poker on him, and they open an oven, and some flames fly out of the oven, and they basically force the Candyman to run away into the pipes.
It also has that other great moment where he has to flick a coin to decide which of them he's going to kill, and the Doctor goes, he hesitates, and the Doctor goes, what is it? And he goes, that would be telling, and then immediately turns to Ace to kill her.
It's very good. But while he's running through the pipes, the sewer people are fussing with the fondant flow, and they redirect it so that it runs over the Candyman, and then just a disintegrated Candyman pops out of the pipes.
They reversed the polarity of the fondant flow.
But that's a truly disgusting, horrible visual. I love it. Of just the bones of the Candyman sliding out of that pipe. That'd probably been worse. I don't know if that'd been worse or better if it had been just a guy.
A guy.
Yeah. And then there's a scene where we get the Candyman's entire origins told to us by Gilbert. It's like Gilbert and Joseph stand over his body and they're like, just discuss how he came about. He was just an experiment gone wrong. And Gilbert and Joseph sort of bond over this. It's a very bizarre scene. I love it. And then Helen is like, things are going bad. I'm going to leave. I'm going to prepare a shuttle to leave. But then when she does, it's like, the shuttle has already left. And she's like, what? And she turns on a video, and Gilbert and Joseph have just run off without her. Yet another gay subtext.
I like to call this this ship Gosif.
It's still just Joseph, but the G is like the J. It's like Jeff. And then that's pretty much everything that goes on. The Dr. Ace and Susan get, you know, control. Like, they tie up the rest of the Happiness Patrol. They find where the music is being pumped out, and they broadcast Earl's harmonica music instead, his blues music. Then the Doctor confronts Helen. Like, he meets her in the streets, and she's like, I'll find another place to enact happiness and control. And the Doctor mentions something about love, and she's like, love is overrated.
I love this scene so much. I think I love the fact that when he first confronts her, her first justification is, they didn't understand me. And there's something about that I just think really hits at the heart of her. And but also, again, it's something I could imagine Trump saying.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand me. And he's got no time for it. I mean, this doesn't get talked about as much as, say, the sniper scene, but I think it's kind of on the same level. The Doctor's still got that kind of fury, that quiet fury to him, which I think just works so well. And to her increasing justifications and her contempt for everyone else, the contempt for the people she was supposed to be leading, I think it works really well.
And the Doctor starts talking about, like, how you need more than just happiness. You need sadness. They're like two sides of the same coin. Like, you need a balance of all these things. And then she just like, I don't need sadness, blah, 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 or whatever. And she turns around, and coming out of the pipes is her dog, Fifi.
I think that's when they're talking about love, because they've already talked about the sadness, and then she's like, I have no use for love, and that's when the dog shows up.
Yeah, and then the dog dies in her arms, and she just collapses into tears, and there's a big crane shot as it pulls out of her crying, and the Doctor and Ace are there, and I think Ace says something, there's something we should do, and he's like, it's done. And that's where the episode should have ended, I think.
I forgot that it didn't.
Yeah. That's such a strong moment. I wish it had ended there.
That was the plan originally, but apparently they stuck on the next scene because John Nathan Turner felt like, because they didn't know the broadcast order, and he felt like if it was going to be the last episode of the series, they should end on a happier note. But, I mean, I do agree with you. It's such a strong ending. You can imagine, as that crane goes up, you can just imagine the credits kicking in.
I wish it had ended there.
And then they paint the TARDIS.
Yeah, see? And then we could have had a pink TARDIS if we'd not had this scene. I mean, this scene is fine, I guess. It's just, it's not as impactful.
If we consider later canon, no, we would not have had a pink TARDIS, because the pink paint would have peeled off as it left, because we've seen that with the Clara artwork.
But basically what the next scene is, like, the Blues have returned, and goodbyes are said, and the Doctor and Earl do a complicated handshake that's...
that makes me cringe.
Oh, yeah, and when they say that the Blues have returned, the Doctor says something about, like, how you need all the colors, and you can't have something without the Blues, and then they're painting the TARDIS blue, and it's that those things are linked, symbolic.
Though later we learned that was unnecessary. They could have just left it, and it would have went away.
Yeah, well, maybe they didn't know that.
But that's it. That's the end of the Happiness Patrol. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for final thoughts.
It was the dawn of another podcast. The Epsilon 3 is a dream given form. It's a home away from home for three guys to watch a 90s sci-fi classic TV show. Three guys with microphones over 3,249 miles apart, all alone in the night. The year is 2021. The name of the station is Babylon 5. The name of the podcast is the Epsilon 3. Veer, bring me a drink.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
Yes, I do.
What time is it?
Oh, you'd like me to tell you?
Please.
Okay. It is 12:46 p.m.
What time is it in Sweden?
It's 18:46.
That's so many hours. That's 18 hours. Okay, but what time is... What do we do at this point in the recording of the podcast?
I think I take a nap.
Yeah, but what happens while you take a nap?
Shh, I'm napping.
But, hey.
Shh. Shh. I'm napping.
How long are you napping for?
So many hours.
It's time for final thoughts. This is a really, really good episode that I enjoy a lot. There's a lot of weird shit in it. And I love Ace and Seven so much. Like, so much. The just intense, quiet rage. Well, it's less quiet with Ace. But the fact that, like, that is their dynamic. That, like, Ace is, like, openly angry and I want to smash things. And the Doctor's like, shh, no. We're going to quietly smash things. We're going to fuck things up in a clever way, but don't worry about it. It's good. It's very good. And the fact that that's all happening at the same time as candy robots and bad guys with weird guns and pink hair. 10 out of 10. Thank you.
All right. Vince, what are your final thoughts?
I don't feel like I have a whole lot of final thoughts. I enjoyed this serial. I think it's well-paced. It has something to say, and it says it coherently and without a lot of falling off of the message. Like, it's fairly on message the whole time. It has some very good scenes, like the sniper scene and the final scene, and there's good scenes, and it's got good ideas. It's got the Candyman. It's got this view of fascism as this colorful, inviting thing, which I think is very important, that I think a lot of dystopian science fiction just doesn't get right. Like, I feel like it's so common to see everything just gray and boring and dull, and everything's forbidden, and you can't be happy. And this I feel was a lot more honest about what fascism does, which is, I mean, it's obviously done in a sort of satirical, exaggerated fashion, but it's saying, like, no, what fascism does is it tricks you. It promises you good things, and then it takes away important things, like lives. So yeah, I feel like this was a very good series. I obviously you can see that the budget is limited. The outdoors look like indoors. That is, you know, unmistakably a fact about this production, but that's fine because it's telling a story, and we're following the story, and it's a well-told story in three parts, which is not too many parts. I think maybe it could have been two parts, but I don't think that's a huge difference. I think this could have been like a one episode of New Who type of length of story, but I don't think it's too bloated. I think it makes fairly good use of its time. I do agree that the Master Splinters kind of veer off a little bit into a thing that's not fully explored, and that could have been a different episode that's specifically focused on colonialism or whatever. Like, but you know, it's still like part of the world building, which I feel was very strong in this serial. It has very strong world building because, like, we're thrown into this world and immediately we know what's going on. I think it's a very good serial. I do wish that I had been keeping up with the show enough to know this Doctor and Ace better. Because I feel like I'm thrown in and I'm like, okay, I get who the Doctor is. I'm gathering which kind of Doctor this is, and it feels very familiar. It feels the Doctor. But this is my only proper exposure to this Doctor. And I recognize this as the Doctor. I'm not like, oh, what? Who's this guy? I'm like, no, this is the Doctor. He does things that the Doctor would do in these situations. I understand this Doctor, I feel like. And I feel like I understand Ace as well on a basic level of like, yeah, Ace is this radical, kind of hot-headed person who wants to make change and do it loudly. And the Doctor is kind of this other voice of like, yes, let's make the change, but let's do it smartly. And I feel like that's an interesting dynamic. I like this serial, and I feel like I've talked too long at this point. I feel like I didn't say a whole lot during the episode. I interjected a couple of times here and there. So I guess this is what I have to say. And I have now said it, and I shall now pass the mic to whoever's next.
That'd be me. Yeah, I really like this serial. Pretty much everything you guys said. I think this does remind me a lot of Paradise Towers a little bit because of the, like, specifically the sets and the bright colors and similar sort of vibe to it. I do think I might slightly prefer Paradise Towers, but only very slightly. I do think the Happiness Patrol is maybe more solid thematically, but I think maybe Paradise Towers is a teeny bit more fun. And I do think this serial, Happiness Patrol, does have a couple of weak points, which is the sewer people, the repetition of the Fifi stuff. But overall, everything else is, like, amazing. The Seventh Doctor is amazing. Ace is amazing. Everything else that this serial is doing is, like, 100% great. And I do enjoy that it's three episodes. The pace feels a lot faster. I could see this being a New Who episode. And if they got rid of that sort of sewer people subplot, it'd probably be, you know, tighten up a little bit. It could be a New Who episode. So I just enjoy everything that this serial is doing and this current era of Doctor Who is doing. It's been so good. And I keep hearing that the rest, from here on out, everything is also very good. So I'm just excited for what we've got left in classic Doctor Who. So, yeah. Adam, what's your final thoughts?
I could have really come on to any episode and talked about any McCoy story and enthused about it. But when it comes down to Happiness Patrol, I just really fucking love it. I think for me, I know Doctor Who can't be like this all the time, and I wouldn't want it to be. But something about having two anarchists who like blowing stuff up, traveling around, finding a fascist regime and just going, no, we're not having this. And then just kicking it over in one night and doing it through intelligence and fury. And I just love that. I love it deeply. And I think it's one of those stories that over the years I've watched it, I get more out of it every time as my understanding of politics increases, as my understanding of how fascism works increases, as I understand how people use and abuse power.
You know that the sewer boys have names.
I know the sewer boys have names. Like, this is still a shocking revelation for me. I don't know if it's something I did know and I've forgotten about, but I'm going to have some deep meditation thoughts on the fact that I wasn't as aware of this as I probably should have been. But no, it's something I don't think any other series could really do this story. Like, it's not impossible to imagine a Star Trek, the original series, doing something about a planet where everyone has to be happy, but it wouldn't be done with the same kind of anarchic fury that the Doctor Who can do. It's not the McCoy episode I would recommend to people if they want to get into classic Who. I always actually recommend Survival, which you guys won't be getting to for a while. But I do always kind of wonder, out of this whole Series 25, this is the one I always really want to recommend to people. I know you're supposed to recommend Remembrance of the Daleks, and Remembrance of the Daleks is fantastic. And I kind of understand if you're trying to go to someone, hey, look, isn't Doctor Who brilliant? You maybe want to go for the thing that isn't obviously set in a studio. But it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant, and it's funny, and it's angry, and I love it dearly.
All right, so that's the Happiness Patrol. Before we go, Is there anything y'all need to plug? Vince, what do you got to plug?
Well, I have so little going on right now, but at some point I might release some new music.
Didn't you just release a new song? I mean, it's in Swedish.
Yeah, it's in Swedish, so I don't think anyone's interested.
I have some of your Swedish songs on my iPod.
But I've got some stuff lined up in English that I just need to record at a time when I'm not having acid reflux. So that's coming at some point.
And where can people find that music?
VincentEL.bandcamp.com, I believe.
Yep, I can confirm. We say it every episode. We actually also say SoundCloud.com/VincentEL. Is there one you have a preference for, or?
Well, generally Bandcamp is the one where I tend to send people, because people can actually buy some of my tracks there. And also, I don't think there's an upload limit for how many things I can put on there, which is different from SoundCloud, which you have to pay for to upload more than a certain amount of stuff.
That sucks. Yeah, go to Bandcamp. Adam, how about you? Anything you need to plug?
I have a couple of podcasts. There's The Real McCoy, which is my Seventh Doctor podcast that I do with Eric. We're now looking at a selection of the new adventures. You can find us on Twitter at @real_pod. And also there are plans for Harry Sullivan is an Imbecile to make a comeback this year, which I do with Brian, friend of the show, Brian Snape. So if you follow us on Twitter at @imbecilepod, we should hopefully have an episode out in the next couple of months.
It's exciting.
Fantastic. Do we have anything we need to plug?
I don't have anything. Do you have anything?
Not really. Listen to the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Please keep listening to our podcast. Thank you.
If you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourassline.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at linktree.com/watchathon. That's linktr.ee/watchathon. And special thanks again to Bisexual Brigadier for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
Check them out on Tumblr at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. Special thanks again to Bill Lamond for becoming a Patreon patron.
Thank you, Bill.
His Twitter is pastshelfdatejr. And special thanks to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our theme song. Hey, thanks, Vince.
You're welcome.
And tune in next time when we talk about Silver Nemesis with Ashley Rayburn and Mike Gordon.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
I assume it's about, you know, the classic Doctor Who villains. Those guys with the arms. What? Chumblies. How about the Chumblies? It's the Chumblies, right?
The Chumblies don't have the arms. The Quarks have the arms.
Quarks have the arms, yeah.
The Chumblies look like upturned punch bowls.
I think it might be about a Picard clone.
I think it's about all three. That's what it's going to be about. But until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Have a tasteful tuna.
Bye.
Impolite guests get to feel the back of my candy hand.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.